Let me kind of define how I'm using the word anger to make sure we're on the same page about that.
I'm using anger in a very general way that includes a lot of different emotions. So it can range from being annoyed or irritated on one side, you know, frustration, okay, being outraged, enraged, spiteful, wrathful, belligerent, rebellious. You got it? Okay? So I'm using the word anger to cover all those things, also including hatred. And the thing that all those different emotions share is that they arise in dependence upon exaggerating the bad qualities of someone or something, and therefore finding that object or thing intolerable and wanting to either destroy it or get away from it. Okay? So it's based on this exaggerated way of conceiving an object. But when we're angry, do we feel like we're exaggerating anything or projecting anything? No, we don't. When we're angry, we feel like we're perceiving reality, right? Don't you? I mean, we're mad because we perceive reality and the other guy's a total jerk who doesn't, you know? And, you know, situations in which we're angry, we're not exaggerating anything. The situation's extremely clear. I'm right and you're wrong and the solution is you change. Right? Yes? The problem is the other person's so dumb that they don't get it, you know? And they're even dumber because they think the same thing about us. Because they think they're right and we're wrong and we need to change, which really shows how totally off way out they are. Okay. Because we're the ones who are right. So, you know, it's quite interesting because by the very definition of anger, we see that it's something that's not based in reality. But when we experience anger, we feel, we're certain that we're perceiving reality. Okay? So it's very, very deceptive in this way. Anger, the way I'm using it, is referring to the mental state. So it's a little bit different than how scientists use the word anger. I was at a science conference with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and one of the scientists there was explaining that when they say something like anger, it has three components. One is the physiological, you know, what's happening to your serotonin and your nerve synapses and, you know, galvanic skin response and all this stuff. The second is the feeling component, and the third is your behavior. So they would refer to all three of these things as anger. From a Buddhist perspective, we only refer to the middle one, to the feeling component as anger. For us, the physiological things, that's not anger, that's just what the atoms and molecules in your body are doing. And similarly, the behavior isn't anger, because behavior is, you know, some of your words and your speech are activities of your body and your speech, whereas anger is an activity of the mind, the consciousness. Okay, so we use it a little bit differently than how scientists look at it. And I think that's very important to recognize, you know, that there's a big difference between the emotion and the behavior. Because a lot of people think when we think of anger, we get the idea of the behavior as being, you know, very aggressive and violent. And when we talk about patience, let's say, as the antidote to anger, we get the impression that patience is just being passive. Okay? This is not at all correct. Yeah, the behavior and the emotion are two different things. Because we can have the emotion of anger, and sometimes our behavior is very aggressive, and sometimes our behavior is very passive. Have you ever been so angry that you can't talk? Yeah? No. And some people say, well, I don't have a problem with anger, thinking that they don't yell and scream and throw things and hit people. But, you know, a lot of us clam up when we're angry, don't we? We just freeze inside, turn away, and shut down. Okay? How many of you, for, you know, mostly how you react when you're angry, how many of you are the explosive type and it comes out outwards? How many of you are the implosive type and you just shut down and clam up? How many of you kind of are masters of both of them? Depending on the situation. Okay? So what I'm getting at, you see that we can have the same emotion but very, very different behavior. Okay? And when we talk about patience as the antidote to anger, we're again talking about a state of mind. And what patience is, it's a state of mind that is calm in confront of harm or suffering. Yeah. So it's a mental state that's calm. The behavior can be very different depending on the situation. Because we can have a very calm mind and be extremely assertive and very, very active. And we can have a calm mind and also be, the behavior could be very peaceful. Okay. So we shouldn't have this image that anger is just aggressive and patience is you become the world's doormat. Because that's not the case at all. Patience is not about becoming a doormat. It's about having a mental state that's clear and calm so that we can look at the situation and hopefully find a resolution that's going to work. Because when we're angry, it's very difficult for us to look at the situation and find a resolution that works. Okay? Because we're so fixated on I'm right, you're wrong, you change, that our minds are closed to almost everything else. Okay? Now, there's been a lot of discussion in our society about if anger is good or not. And there's some people who are definite advocates of anger, you know, and you should be angry. These people did this to you, you should be angry, you know, and they encourage people to be angry. And I even, this is a hilarious thing. Actually, you know what had happened years ago? It must have been maybe 1989 or 91, something like that. And I was talking at the Jewel Heart in Ann Arbor. Okay? And then they also arranged for me to talk with a group of people who were mediators who taught mediation conflict resolution at the university. So I went to talk to this group of mediators. They weren't Buddhists or anything. And we were talking about anger. And they got really upset with me. Yes, you bet they did. They were very angry at me when I talked about the disadvantages of anger. Because they said anger is good. Anger lets you know that something's wrong. And anger gives you the energy to correct injustice. And we need anger. Okay? Now, from a Buddhist viewpoint, you know, well, let me put some questions to you and let's just check if anger is actually beneficial. Okay? So, does anger create human happiness? Okay. Anybody here happy when they're angry? No, we're not happy when we're angry. So, right off the bat, anger doesn't create happiness for the person who has it. Okay? So it's not creating happiness for the person who has it. When we're angry, how do we communicate with other people? Yeah? Poorly, isn't it? Because real communication means that we stop and think, if I were that person, you know, how would I, you know, how could I explain this so that that person, given their upbringing and their belief system and their way of thinking, how could I express it so they would understand me? But when we're angry, we don't stop to think about that, do we? when we're angry, we say what we think and feel loudly in case they have a hearing problem. And we repeat it many times in case they have senior moments and short-term memory loss. But do we really communicate? No. Okay. When somebody is really angry at you, do you listen to the content of what they're saying, or are you reacting to the energy of the anger? Flip the situation around. When somebody is expressing anger to you, either by shutting down or acting out, do you listen to the content, or are you reactive just to the energy of the emotion? Yeah. We're mostly reacting to the energy, isn't it? You know, we don't really listen to the content so much, because all we're aware of is, this person is mad at me. How dare they be? So similarly, you know, when we get angry at somebody else, we don't express ourselves well, and they also aren't able to listen to us very well. So anger is really deceptive because, you know, anger kind of whispers in our ear, follow me and I'll make you happy. And, you know, we get this feeling, well, if I'm angry, anger will make me happy. But in actual fact, we don't communicate very well when we're angry, and so we generally aren't able to bring about the results that we want. Okay. For example, who do you get the most angry with? Somebody you don't know or somebody you care about a great deal? Who do you get the most angry at? People you care about.
Or
yourself. Well, you care about yourself. Yeah. Okay. When, let's say it's somebody, you know, other than yourself, somebody that you really care about, you're really ticked off at them. What is it that you want most to feel in relationship to them at that time when you're really upset? What is it you're really wanting?
You want your position to be understood?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the resolution that you want? The resolution isn't that you want. You want to be happy with them, don't you? You want to be close to them. That's the resolution you're really looking for. You know, and when you're mad at somebody you care about, what you're really wanting is to be close. Isn't it? Yeah? Okay. When you're angry, does your behavior bring about closeness with that person? No. Do you see why I said anger is very deceptive? Because what we're really wanting is to be close. But by the behavior that we're doing, motivated by the anger, is we're doing what's going to push the other person further away from us. Okay. Because, for example, those of us who are the shutdown, clam up type, okay, when we shut down and clam up and won't talk, Is that a way to create closeness and communication? How does the other person react? How does your loved one react when you shut down? Yeah, and it bugs you even more. You shut down even more, isn't it? Yeah, I know that. Really well. So, you know, when we shut down, what we're really wanting to do is be close, but we're not doing what is necessary to actually be close to the person. Okay. Similarly, if you're the explosive type, yeah, what you're, again, what really wanting is to be close to the person, but by your behavior, are you making them feel close to you? No. Okay. So when you get kind of the explosive and the implosion person, you know, together in a couple, boy, I mean, you really drive each other nuts. You know, same thing if you, I'm seeing a lot of people reacting here. You know what I'm talking about, huh? Similarly, if you get two explosive people, you know, you yell and scream, but do you communicate? Or two implosive people, you know, they both shut down and there's, you know, the temperature drops. Yeah, everything's icy and everybody around them feels it. Okay, but what we're really wanting is to be close to the person. So anger you know, deceives us because it makes us feel like it's going to bring about a resolution of our problem. But in actual fact, it brings about what we don't want, which is more distance from the person. Anger doesn't really bring about what we want. Okay, so anger really is deceptive in that way because it lies to us, it cheats us. Okay? Another thing that these mediation people were saying why anger was good is they say anger, you need anger to correct social injustice and to stop oppression and exploitation. Okay? And I really question that. Because that's a commonly held belief in our society. If you're a social activist, you're angry. You know, you're angry at, you know, the destruction of the environment. You're angry at the war. You're angry at, you know, the budget cuts for education. And we begin to think that the only way to correct social problems or to correct situations of injustice or oppression or even in a personal situation if we all see other people, you know, not treating each other very nicely, we feel like the only way to intercede is by being angry at the situation. And I don't think that's correct. Because the difficulty with that is when we're angry, our mind becomes very much like the mind of the person that we're objecting to. Doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, I remember for those of you who are in my vintage, the Vietnam War protests. And I remember being at one and some guy kind of down the line picking up a brick or a rock or something and throwing it. And I went, whoa. This was before I became a Buddhist even. And I said, whoa, you know, this isn't right. Because at that moment when you become violent in protesting against war, your mind is thinking exactly like the mind of the person you're protesting against. Okay? So similarly, when we're trying to correct any kind of social injustice, if we're angry, we tend not to think clearly. And we tend to get into this us and them position, you know, where I'm right and they're wrong. And I used to live in the Northwest, you know, so the environment was a big issue there, and especially deforestation. So a lot of people were very upset about cutting down the trees. And I remember seeing a bunch of, you know, and people would go out and hug trees so that they couldn't cut them down. So I remember seeing a bumper sticker that said, try hugging a logger instead. You know? And I thought that was really cute. But it made the point to me, you know, the loggers are human beings, you know, who want to be happy and who don't want to suffer. And, if you know, in protecting the environment, if you make an enemy out of other people that you share the environment with, then something's gone awry, okay? So we have to look at solutions that are going to be, you know, acceptable in them as much as you can make them acceptable to the greatest number of people and not just have an us and them mentality where all we do is blame the other party, okay? Because we can get really into blaming, can't we? You know, we're very good at blaming. It's one of my specialties, okay? If you ever need to learn how to blame, I have a PhD in blaming, okay? And I have a minor in complaining, but I complain just as much as I blame, you know, and criticizing others, very good at that as well, okay? But where does all the blaming get us? You know, as soon as we say, I'm suffering and I'm angry and it's your fault, you made me angry, what's happening? You know, does another person really make us angry? Who makes us angry? You know, if the other person's sitting there, they're there and they're saying, is anger something that's coming from them into me that I catch it? Like SARS, and I don't. You made me angry. I got the anger virus from you. Does the other person make us angry? Does the situation make us angry? Where is the anger coming from? Is it coming from outside or is it coming from inside? Who's making who angry? Aren't we making ourselves angry? because we're perceiving and conceiving the situation in a certain way. Yeah. By the way of how we're interpreting this situation, we make ourselves angry. Because, you see, if it were the other person who were making us angry, then we have no way to prevent anger or control anger because the other person has all the power. So when we say, you make me angry, we give our power to the other person and we make ourselves victims. Okay? When we say, it's your fault that I'm unhappy, that way of thinking makes ourselves into a victim. Okay? Because it's your fault, I'm just sweet, innocent little me. I didn't do anything wrong. So I have no power. You have all the power. Which means I'm stuck, doesn't it? Okay? So we're the ones that make ourselves into victims by the way we think. Nobody else makes us into a victim. Think about this for a little while. Okay? Because you need to actually think about it for a long time, because it requires a lot of thought. Yeah. That we become victims by our own way of thinking, not by what somebody does to us. Okay? So, if we say, you made me angry, my anger is all due to you, it's all your fault, and we do our blaming trip, then we're totally stuck in our misery. Yeah? And all we do is keep blaming. And it's very convenient to blame, because when we blame, then we don't have to do anything, do we? Well, all we have to do is sit there and enjoy our anger. Yeah, because it's all the other person's fault. I don't have to correct myself. I don't have to change. I don't have to try and look at the situation in another way. I don't have to try and have compassion because it's all the other person's fault. Okay? So there's something very enticing about blaming because it's really convenient. It means I have no responsibility. But the thing is, if we have no responsibility, then we also have no power to change the situation. So you see, we're really putting ourselves in a hole when we blame. Okay? Whereas if we say that, you know, my anger is coming from inside me and it's, you know, due to the way I'm interpreting this situation, then I have some responsibility for being angry, and I also have some power to do something with my anger because I can change how I interpret the situation. Now somebody's going to say, what are you talking about? I'm angry because how I'm interpreting the situation. I'm not angry at how I'm because of how I'm interpreting it. I'm seeing reality. You know, it has nothing to do with interpretation. That person cheated me. That person called me a name. They insulted me. It has nothing to do with interpretation. Okay. Well, let's flip it around a little bit. Have you ever been in the situation where somebody's gotten really, really upset with you and they treat you, I mean, but you can tell they're really, really mad at you, and when you finally kind of coax them to tell you about what it was and they tell you what it was that they got upset about, and they tell you some story about what you said or what you did and you're going, huh? You know, I never meant it that way. Have you ever had that situation? You know? And it's like, boy, this person got so upset at me. I had no intention of upsetting them. I didn't mean at all what they interpreted. Okay? So we can see that kind of situation when other people, by the power of their wrong interpretation, they get unnecessarily upset. Well, let's question our own anger and ask ourselves when we're upset if we're properly interpreting the situation or not. Because maybe we're doing just exactly what other people have done with us. Mm-hmm. And we can think of so many situations like that, can't we? I remember one situation. I told this story. It was happened many years ago when I was living in Singapore. And it was Lamasong Kapa Day, one of the Tibetan Buddhist festivals. And it's traditional on that day that we light a lot of candles. You know, it usually happens around Christmas and Hanukkah time. It's interesting, you know, because the Tibetans have this thing where you light candles. So we were there in Singapore, and I was lighting the candles, and one of my students came and said, I want to take a picture of you. And I said, I'm busy lighting these candles. Let's do it later. Okay, so I finished lighting the candles, and there's all these people there, and I'm kind of in charge of the event. So then I wind up, you know, talking to all these people and doing all these other things. And, you know, and the evening goes on, and it's fine. We have a great time, and we finish. And, you know, and then the next time I see this student, you know, she's really acting very strange. And this goes on for a while, and then I say, well, what happened, you know? And she said, you said that we could take a picture later, and then you didn't speak to me for the rest of the evening. You know, totally ignored me. You know, did I do something wrong, or are you just like a cold teacher, or what's the story? I mean, she was really upset. So I said, huh? You know, I said, you know, I totally forgot about it because there were all these other things going on and, you know, all these other things happening. So we got that cleared up. What's very funny about it is, you know, she's quite a devoted student and all these years later, and she transcribes a lot of my teachings and things. And one time, she transcribed the talk where I was telling this story. But you can laugh at it now, you know. But, I mean, things like this happen where, you know, people project all sorts of stuff. And we do the same thing, you know. And, you know, we often do it especially because we see things. When we're angry, we're seeing everything and interpreting everything through the veil of me. Okay? And especially through the veil of what I'm sensitive about. Yeah. And so we pick out different things that are going on in the situation, and we create a story about them, and then we think that story is what the reality of the situation is. Okay? And we prime ourselves to get angry depending on the things we're sensitive about, and we even start constructing the story before it's happened. Yeah, I mean, how many times before you've gone to a family dinner, have you said to your friend, I know exactly what's going to happen at Thanksgiving this year, you know? And you know, there you are. You're all ready, you know. You're ready because, you know, every year your brother says this and your sister says that and your mother says this. And you're all ready with your reactions, you know. And we just play out the same scene every Thanksgiving. It's really rather boring, isn't it? You know, but we're just sensitive about things, and we're primed to get upset. There's another story with a friend of mine. I don't know if she ever listens to these tapes. a number of years ago, she had a baby. And, you know, when you have a baby, you put on weight. You're supposed to put on weight, okay? And especially when you're nursing, you know, you have to have extra weight. And if you don't have it, something's wrong. So, of course, she was pregnant, she was nursing, she had put on weight. So she was going to, it was a holiday time, and she was going to take her baby to see the rest of her family in a different state. And I was talking with her before she went on the holiday, and she said to me, I know that as soon as I get off the plane, and my sister's meeting me at the airport, she's going to look at me and go, you put on weight. And my friend was already getting really angry about this. Okay, she hadn't even gotten on the plane yet. Yeah, she hadn't seen her sister, but she was already mad at her sister. Okay? So you can see, we prime ourselves. Because even if she got off the plane and her sister said, you look great, my friend would have thought, what are you making fun of me for? Yeah? And we're like that, aren't we, you know? I mean, we make up a story about somebody else, and then we interpret whatever they do in light of that story. No? And we don't bother to check it out. So that's what I mean when I say that, you know, our anger is our responsibility according to how we're interpreting the story, how we're creating the story and putting the pieces together. Because it really is true, you know, we create whole dramas. Haven't you ever noticed that when you're angry? Yeah? When you're angry, there's a lot of thoughts in the mind, aren't there? Yeah? Whole dramas. Yeah? We're writing soap operas. Yeah? He did this, and then he did that, and then she did this, and can you believe it? I don't understand. And why me and these people are always doing this to me, and my whole life it's always been like this, and this is unfair, and how come, and da 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 da, and you know, what am I going to do, and if I do this, this will happen, if I do that, that will happen. I don't know what to do, because this will always happen to me, no. You know, I mean, we drive ourselves totally nutty, don't we? Okay? And all it is a story that our own mind is making up. And we thought we couldn't do creative writing. We're actually very good at creative writing, you know. We make up all these dramas. And who do they star? Who's the star of the dramas? Me, isn't it? No. So we all have our own patterns of dramas we make up. There's the poor me drama. Poor me. I do so much to help everybody. I mean so well. But they always mistreat me and don't appreciate me. Poor me. Nobody loves me enough. Poor me. Oh, you know the poor me drama? Yeah, do you play that one? Come on. Who plays poor me? Who plays poor me? Come on, there's more of you out there. We play poor me a lot, don't we? You know, pauvre de me, you know, again and again, how the world mistreats us, okay? So we do that one. And then we also do the they disrespect me one, okay? They don't respect me enough, you know. Look at the way I walked into the office and look at how the secretary said hello this morning. She doesn't respect me. You know, look at the way my boss is doing. They, you know, my colleagues don't respect me. I've got to demand more respect. You know, nobody in my family respects me. The kids walk all over me. My spouse walks all over me. You know, and we write the they don't respect me video. Okay? And we play that one out again and again. Okay? Who is stars in the they don't respect me video? Okay? So we have all different sorts of ones, you know. Yeah. The nobody loves me video. You know, I'm so lovable, I'm so sweet, I'm so wonderful, and nobody loves me. I mean, what's up with this stupid world? Nobody loves me. Yeah. And we get on and go on and on and on. And all this is our conceptual mind. You know, our conceptual mind doing creative writing, starring me. You know, it never stars anybody else, does it? Does it? I mean, do you ever write stories where somebody else is the center of do you ever get so bummed out because somebody else isn't appreciated enough? You know? I mean, do you ever get bummed out because nobody loves me? No, you know, you don't care if nobody loves me, you know. Who am I? We only get bummed out if it's about us. Okay? So, you know, this is why I say that it's due to our conceptual mind and how we interpret things, because we make up all these incredible stories and then get bummed out about it. You know, and very much with anger, okay? I mean, if somebody comes in this room, let's say somebody's sitting there, my friend is sitting there, okay? And somebody comes into this room and looks at my friend and says, Joe, I can't believe you did this. You know, I was counting on you to finish this project, and you promised me you'd get it done by a certain time, and you totally flaked out, and you're totally responsible, and I can't trust you again. And my friend Joe is getting really, you know, hurt and angry and stuff like that. After the other guy leaves, I go, Joe, you know, don't worry about it. You know, this person who got angry and, you know, dumped all their stuff on you, it's, you know, they're just upset. You don't need to take it personally. You know, because Joe's totally bummed out about it. Now, you don't need to take it personally. Don't get angry. You know, they're just dumping and venting, and don't worry about it. Okay. But if the same person walked in the room and said the exact same thing, but instead of looking at Joe, they look at me. You know, we have a very important event occurring here. You know, and who does that guy think he is telling me that I flaked out? You know. And he said the exact same words, except instead of making eye contact with Joe, he made eye contact with me. What's the difference? It's about me. That's the only difference, isn't it? The words the guy says are exactly the same. He does it to Joe, don't get bummed out. He's just venting. He does it to me, national disaster. Okay, we've got to mobilize the forces and do something about this, because this is the epitome of injustice. Okay. And it's only because it involves me. I mean, who wouldn't care otherwise? Lots of people. Today, so many people in the world got insulted. Did you get bummed out about any of it? No, we only get bummed out and angry when we get insulted. So many people today, think of, there's over 5 billion human beings on this planet. How many of them got criticized today? Okay, a lot of them got criticized. You may have even criticized some of them. Okay, but do we get bummed out because other people get criticized? No, who cares? Yeah, we only get bummed out if I get criticized. So it's all just depending on interpretation. Yeah. And it's all based on this concept of me, center of the universe. Everything that happens to me is the most important thing in the world. You know, and we better get that straight, because that's fundamental premise of the universe, that I'm the most important one. You know, me, I, my, and mine. Don't we kind of run our lives like that? True. And we get totally, that's why we're so unhappy. Because we make everything that happens to me into a big deal. Okay? If it happens to somebody else, we don't make it into a big deal. If it happens to us, it becomes a huge big deal. Okay? And it's our mind that makes it a big deal. It's not that objectively it's a big deal. Okay? So when we're talking about how to work with anger, yeah, we can see right off the bat, one way to work with anger is to take the I out of it, okay? Because if we stop making such a big deal out of ourselves, a lot of our anger would go away. I'll tell you one story. I was at the prison this afternoon. I told the prisoners this story, too. I was working on a project a number of years back. You guys probably think people are really nice to nuns. Let me tell you. So I was working on this project and, you know, trying to get something published and doing all this work. And this group of people totally sabotaged my work, you know, and they had these meetings behind my back. They did all this stuff behind my back. And criticized me and blah, 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 blah. I mean, you cannot believe what these people did. But they were really awful. And I was miserable. I mean, I was so upset. It's like, I trusted these people, and how could they do this to me? And, you know, these are people who are, you know, kind of respectable people, and how could it, out of that, you know. And I was so angry, I mean, really angry and upset. And I went to India for His Holiness the Dalai Lama's teachings. And, of course, you know, His Holiness is always talking about love and compassion. So, you know, I'm trying to generate some love and compassion for these people. And, you know, I get a little bit in my meditation, and then it's like, oh, but I can't believe they did this. And I just kept getting angry and angry. And then one day I was walking back to my room after the teachings, and this thought occurred to my mind that there's over 5 billion human beings on this planet, and this situation is upsetting to only one. Me. You know? And it just kind of hit me, wow, there's 5 billion, and nobody else cares about this. Yeah. And so I thought, if nobody else is so bummed out about this, why do I need to be? You know? If it doesn't disturb anybody else, why do I need to be so upset by this? And that was really good, because I just started dropping it at that moment. Because it just didn't make any sense to keep going on and on. Because I think I also realized that nobody else was going to side with me, even though I was definitely right. You know, that nobody else cared enough about how unjust it was, because there were all these other unjust things going on in the world at that time, and they didn't care about the injustice that happened to me. You know, because I was the only one that suffered from it, you know. So, but it was good, because I began to be able to let go then. You know? And to see that when we hold grudges for what other people have done to us, we torment ourselves. Yeah? Number one way of self-torture, hold a grudge and don't forgive. Okay? So, you know, forgiving just means that we let go of our anger. Forgiving doesn't mean we say what the other person did is okay. Because what they did might not have been okay. Might have been totally inappropriate and harmful. But forgiving just means that we're saying, I am not going to carry this around for the rest of my life and make myself miserable about it. Okay? You know, you often wonder why old people are stooped over. My theory is, because they carry around so many hurts and so much anger from bitterness from previous times that they can't get let go of. So it's like bricks on your back. Yeah, bricks in your heart. But if you think about it, you know, if we want to age and be happy as old people, we have to be able to let things go and not carry our grudges with us. Because we see situations where people hold a grudge about something that happened 20, 30, 50 years ago. Yeah. How many of you have families in which different people in the family don't speak to each other? Not just my family, huh? My family never listens to these tapes, so I can say that. They think I'm crazy.
And luckily you're not suffering from that.
Right. But, you know, I think we hold on to these grudges and we're so miserable, and then we teach our children how to hate. I mean, if you look at what happened in Yugoslavia, the whole mess, you know, where did all that hatred come from? Things that happened, what was it, 100, 200 years ago? Okay? So the people who were fighting in the 1990s weren't even alive when, you know, this group traumatized that group. But, you know, you hold on to it as I, you know, we hold on to my race, my people, my nationality. You did that to them 200 years ago. So, you know, even though none of us were alive when that happened, we're going to hate each other. And so, you know, you teach your kids how to hate. And if we look at so many conflicts in the world, it's because parents have passed down grudges from one generation to the next. And if you think about your kids and you want your kids to be happy, the best way is don't have them carry on your grudges. Don't drag them into your stuff. And the more we can forgive and heal our things, then the better off the kids are going to be. Because I remember when I was a little kid that the family had, there's some kind of vacation place in Wisconsin. And there were two buildings, both with an upstairs and a downstairs. And I just knew that the family who lived up the hill on the upstairs, I wasn't supposed to talk to. I don't know why. You know, something happened at the level of my grandparents' generation, but I just knew when I was a kid I wasn't supposed to talk to these people. So you go on holiday, you know, with your relatives, but you don't talk to those relatives, right? Okay? And then I saw my parents' generation, my aunts and uncles, different things happened, and different aunts and uncles started not talking to each other. It became a real problem when there was a wedding or a big family event, because you're trying to make the seating plan, and you don't know who's talking to each other. And then I was a kid, and I just thought, well, this is just stupid adult things, you know? Kind of, I mean, I thought a lot of what adults did was kind of dumb when I was a kid. I still do. Even though I'm an adult. but, you know, I was thinking, why are they fighting? It's their brothers and sisters. And then I saw my generation with the cousins, you know, different cousins not speaking to different cousins. It was appalling. And then it was like, uh-oh, you can't just blame it on the grown-ups anymore. It's like our generation, too. And then you saw that when the cousins were doing it, of course, their children are there hearing it all, so they learn from their parents that this is the way you treat your relatives. Okay? So it's not really conducive to harmony, is it? Yeah? So it doesn't create harmony for future generations, and it also makes us quite miserable right now. Because when we're really upset with people that are part of our family, and we're holding on to the upset, you know, who's miserable in it? You know, when we take a vow, I'm never going to speak to you again. And have you ever noticed we never break that vow? Yeah, marriage vows you renegotiate. Okay. But when you vow never to speak to somebody again, we don't renegotiate. But, you know, what happened? Who's suffering? Is the other person suffering? You know, they did whatever they did one time, but we sit there every day and remember what they did to us and make ourselves more and more angry, yeah? And dig ourselves into a pit with our own anger, okay? So forgiveness simply means that we're stopping that and we're not going to hate the other person, yeah? We can still say what they did was wrong, but why hate them? Mm-hmm. Okay, and when we do that, then we can have a much more peaceful heart ourselves. One of the first Dharma courses, well, actually the first Dharma course I went to, there was a man who was maybe about 20 years older than me, and we both got into the Dharma at the same time. It was maybe even more than that. But anyway, we both got into the Dharma at the same time and did some retreats and things together. And he died about a couple of years ago. They just found him dead in his house. We were not quite sure what happened. I think it might have been a heart attack or a stroke or something like that. But I found out after he had died that about a month before he had died, he lived in Northern California, that he had gone down to Southern California and seen his daughter from whom he had been estranged for many years. And I thought, how incredible, you know, before he dies, because he didn't know he was going to die. It was just, you know, one of these sudden death kind of things. That he had gone down and, you know, recreated the relationship with his daughter. And it probably, the fact that he had done that probably brought him so much peace when he died, because he wasn't carrying that burden. And also for her, the fact that she had made up with her father before he died must have, you know, been a tremendous thing for her also. I was just really happy that that had happened. So I think it's very important when we have these kinds of difficult relationships, as much as possible, to be able to let go. And sometimes the other person isn't ready. You know, in the case of my friend, both he and his daughter were ready to let go and, you know, reconcile. In some cases, there's a situation where we may go to the other person and they're not ready to do it yet.
That's okay. The important thing is that from our side, we're the ones who forgive. You know, if they don't forgive, that's their thing. We can't force it. But from our side, to generate a kind heart towards those people, you know, or that person, is something really, really important. Okay? And it's for our own peace of mind, and it's for our own spiritual progress. Because we all know that when we hold on to a very deep grudge, it becomes very difficult to meditate on love and compassion, doesn't it? Because we always get stuck around this one person about how could they have done that to me? Yeah. Well, who in the world knows how they could have done that to me? They probably don't even know why they did it, you know? And who cares? Yeah, it doesn't really matter why somebody did something. What matters right now is having a peaceful heart, because whatever happened is not happening at the moment, so why carry it around with us? Yeah? Have you ever noticed in meditation sessions, when you're doing some meditation, how all sorts of stuff from the past comes up? Have you noticed that? You're doing meditation? Yeah, if you go into retreat, you're sitting there saying the mantra of the Buddha of compassion, you know, Mani Padme Hum is the mantra of the Buddha of compassion. Mani Padme Hum. 20 years ago, when I was 6 years old, my brother, you know, hit me with a squirt gun and threw me in a swimming pool. Oh, my honey, oh, my honey. You know. And then, you know, my boss last week gave me a dirty look. Oh, my honey. This is going on all the time at the office. I can't believe this. Oh, my honey. I've got to do something about it. I can't stand to keep your eyes closed. Oh, my honey. You know, and we plan out this whole thing about what we're going to do to get our revenge on the other person. You know, so we plan our revenge for our brother, for our sister, for our boss. You know, we do very detailed visualization. Yeah? Don't we? Extremely detailed. You have it all exactly, you know, how you're going to walk in. You perfectly clear visualization of them and how you're going to say those words and how they're just going to, like, you know, it's so clear. And you focus on it single-pointedly, don't you? I mean, when we're planning our revenge, we don't get distracted. You know, they could be doing whatever across the street. We don't hear it at all. We're totally focused on, you know, planning our revenge. Okay? It's true. Yeah? So, you see, we do have the ability to concentrate. It's just we have to switch the object to concentration. Yeah. Because we can spend whole meditation sessions, you know, planning this, you know, and then at the end, you know, the bell rings. And then it's due to this. And part of your mind is going, what merit? You know? I spent this whole meditation session creating cause for the lower realms. What am I dedicating? Okay. But it's amazing how we can get so wrapped up into remembering and, you know, clear visualization of something that is not happening now. Isn't it amazing? And that things from the past, we can replay it perfect detail. You know, things from the future, how we're going to, you know, get our revenge. Again, perfect concentration. And then we wake, you know, we come out of our meditation, and it's like that person isn't even here. I was so angry, and that person isn't even here. Who was making me angry? Yeah? Who is making me angry? I'm sitting in this room full of nice people who were all sitting there with their eyes closed, not even saying anything to me. And yet I was raging, boiling, exploding in anger, even though I was sitting so nicely, you know. So who is making me angry? It's clearly my own mind, isn't it? Yeah, it's coming from inside. Nobody outside to blame. But then that means that we can do something about it. Because all we have to do is look at the situation in a different way, and we can make the anger go away. You know? Like I told you, I realized that nobody else was traumatized by this horrible thing these people did to me. And as soon as I looked at it from that point of view, I let go and my mind was okay. I had another situation. I get to tell you all my stories. This was a great one. There were two ones. Which one shall I tell you? Okay, I'll tell you this one. So I was at a retreat with my teacher, and there was another person there who overheard something that I had said to somebody, you know, and just came up to me and said, you know, because I was commenting about something our teacher had said, and this person came up to me and said, "How can you say that? Na 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 na." This was a break in between teachings, you know, when your teacher's sitting on the throne and you're all supposed to be sweet disciples, and you know we're not, and you know, so she's really laying into me, telling me off. And then, of course, the bell rings, and we sit down, and we finish the teaching. And then I'm walking back to my room, and it was really late at night, you know, because my teacher likes to teach until all hours. And I was so tired that I was really angry. And then I said, "Well, if you just keep on with this anger, you're not going to be able to sleep. So let's, you know, push the pause button, and you can be angry again tomorrow, but let's get some sleep." So I did that, got some sleep, woke up the next morning, you know, got to remember, I got to be angry. I have enough energy to be angry now. So I got angry at her again. And I remember I was walking. You know, kind of after you've been around the Dharma enough, whenever you're angry, there's one part of your mind that says, "Yeah, you're angry. This isn't a virtuous mind. You better do something about it." You know, and you try and shut that thing up, saying, "No, I'm not angry. It's that person that did this." You know, but when you're around the Dharma enough, that keeps going on, you know. So, okay, I'm angry. And then I thought, where am I going to go in this universe where nobody's going to criticize me? You know, somebody criticized me last night, unfairly. But where am I going to go in this whole universe where nobody's going to criticize me? You know, because, I mean, every year, every month, every week, somebody criticizes. Where are we going to go where everybody's going to be totally pleased with us? Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but one of my rules of the universe is everybody's got to like me. Nobody's allowed to criticize me. They break a law if they criticize me. Okay. But when I started to say, you know, okay, I'm living with all these people who break the law of my universe by criticizing me. Well, where am I going to go where nobody's going to criticize me? And I just said to myself, "Children, you better get used to this, you know, because somebody's going to criticize you your whole life. I mean, after this talk, you can all break up into little groups." Did you hear it? This nutty nugs. Okay. But it's true, isn't it? Where are we going to go where nobody's going to criticize us? You know? Impossible. Impossible. And so the moment, when I thought that, then again I just stopped being angry at her, because it's like, it's useless. Who has the energy to be angry at everybody who criticizes you? Yeah. And then I kind of had to admit that it is a free world and they can dislike me if they want to. I mean, it's hard to admit that. I have to give them permission to dislike me. But, you know, it's true, isn't it? You know, it's never going to be the case that everybody's totally pleased with us. And it doesn't mean we're an awful person. Doesn't mean that they're an awful person. It just means everybody's full of their own opinions, and so let's get on and do something useful with our life instead of ruminating about all this stuff. Okay? So you see, by just changing how we look at the situation, then we can change how we feel and let the anger go.